Hello and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shea Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Dennis Prout is an investment advisor representative with Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with a financial professional.
And we happen to have one or two in the studio with us today, and even a really big guest on the phone. Welcome back to New Retirement Radio. Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner, Prout Financial Design, is in the house. Good morning, sir.
Thank you, Ron. It is great to be here on May 23rd, 2019. Boy, what a great day it is today. The cherry blossoms are popping. It was 65 on the way into work, and now 73.
It's is it really? Beautiful 73. Out there.
Wow.
Gorgeous.
Amazing.
Gorgeous, gorgeous. We'll take it. And, of course, Heidi is with us as well.
Good morning.
A Master Elite Advisor who just attended recently the Ed Slott program for Master Elite Advisors. She is a Master Elite Advisor, as am I, and we have as a guest, in just a moment, we'll have him on, Ed Slott. So last week we had a variety of questions. In fact, we didn't even get to our material last week.
Oh, surprise.
Because it was about, a lot of the questions were about beneficiary issues. Oh. So part of the show today will be talking about this. And as an adjunct to that, or in addition to that, we have Ed Slott calling in. He is a nationally recognized professional speaker, been in several nationally aired public television specials, including his most recent Retire Safe and Secure with Ed Slott 2019. Slott created the IRA Leadership Program and Ed Slott's Elite Advisor Group, which were developed specifically to help professionals financial professionals earn recognition as leaders in the IRA marketplace. And personally, Ed adds his passion and energy every time that event occurs, and it's certainly appreciated. As a thought leader in the retirement industry, Slott is often quoted in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Money, Kiplinger's, USA Today, Investment News, and a host of additional national magazines. It is a pleasure to have you here with us, Ed. Welcome.
Hi, Dennis. Great to be back on the program.
Great to hear you. How are you doing today?
Great. I heard you talking about the weather, but the big weather issue is whether I'm going to pay taxes on my retirement savings.
I knew you'd be able to turn it back to tax, Ed. That's great.
Everything
That's
comes great. To taxes.
It does.
The less you pay, the more you keep.
Yes.
But to keep more and pay less, you have to have a plan, which almost nobody does, so I'm glad you're addressing it.
Well, we're doing our darndest to do that, and you did here in the most recent newsletter to us financial professionals from May. And one of the first, well, the title of this was Fixing IRA and Retirement Plan Mistakes and discovering opportunities that may still be available. I added that particular part. But the first part of that was bad beneficiaries. And it was amazing the phone calls we had last week. Honestly, I said as we got those calls, I was stunned, given the calls that we got and the complexity of the issues that they were facing. So bad beneficiaries, what would be some of your comments about that, Ed, and how people might deal with that and or fix it if it hasn't been done properly?
Well, as you know, Dennis, in our Elite IRA Advisor Group, which I heard you mention, you're both Master Elite Advisors, and I think listeners should know that the level of education you commit to is unprecedented throughout the whole country. I mean, 99% of financial advisors are not at that level. You're at the top 1%. So I think listeners need to know when you're coming into retirement, you want to work with a proactive advisor like Dennis that has the specialized knowledge. Most do not. That's why I created this educational study group. And as Dennis has told you, it's a very high level, high concepts, but many of the concepts can directly apply to you keeping more of your money, or I should say your family. One of the things we see is 100% tax. Now, people listening say, who pays 100% tax? There is no such thing. Well, there is if you're a beneficiary that was disinherited. I would call that 100% tax if you lose everything. And that's what Dennis is, that's what you were asking me about, beneficiary forms. Most advisors are not proactive enough to let clients know that let people know that beneficiary forms need to be updated on your IRAs, on your 401ks, on your life insurance policies, annuities. Anything with a beneficiary form is critical to have correct, because beneficiary forms, for the most part, override a will. You could update a will and say, well, I want to take this one in, or leave this child out, or put this child in, or I have a new child, or I have a new grandchild, and you put it in your will, but it has no effect if the beneficiary forms, say, for the IRA, are not updated. When should they be updated? They should be checked minimally at least once a year. But if you have what I call life events at any time within a year, what I mean by life events are you had a new birth, a death, a marriage, a divorce. A divorce is a big one. That's the big one where people forget to change beneficiary forms and the money goes to an ex-spouse, or a remarriage, or a new grandchild, or a change in the tax law, or any of the factors you relied on when you made your plan. If they change, the beneficiary form has to be updated, and properly updated with the institution. Make sure your financial advisor has a copy. These are things, Dennis, you know I've drummed into you at every meeting. I don't think there's ever been a meeting in the 15 years we've had this group where I didn't, you know, bang on you guys check beneficiary forms.
Yes.
Yet it's still a problem. It's a big problem, especially in, like I said, in the area of divorce. This happens all the time. People go through a horrible divorce, and people say, are they all horrible? Yes. There's no good divorce that I've seen when it comes to big money. And they have financial advisors and accountants and even a judge, and they make their agreement. But yet, the big item that's being negotiated now, the big item is not the house anymore. A lot of houses have heavy mortgages. Nobody even wants them. It's the IRA and the 401k. And they might make an agreement, but they have to update the beneficiary form. If that's not done, it can easily go to an unwanted ex-spouse because it wasn't corrected.
There are so many caveats. If those beneficiaries have not been updated, that have to occur as a result of that un-updating, if you will. And then it's interesting to note, too, most assets today pass by a beneficiary. Most
right.
of them do.
Yep.
That's where the
that's
majority
the
of assets
asset.
Are held, which you just kind of referenced. Whether it's a retirement account, a 401k, life insurance, annuities, even some
those
regular brokerage
ones.
Accounts
passed
by
beneficiary. If you look at your list of assets, anybody who has that, that probably far exceeds the value of your house and your car, that's
oh, yeah.
for sure.
That's for sure. Absolutely. Because these things have had, well, everyone has taken on, well, not everyone. Many people have taken that responsibility seriously in trying to get assets accumulated into these retirement accounts so that they can draw income. Because so many now don't have a pension income. So as a result, these account values have ballooned. And trying to get these passed on to the spouse, or spouse one, if you will, and or spouse two or three, and making certain that that's done properly, and then the succeeding children that are involved as well, all of a sudden we get complexity, almost exponential, don't we, Ed?
Yeah, and there's another point. Even people think that they have a beneficiary form created and it looks correct. I would go one step further and check that there's a contingent beneficiary in case you want to make a change after death. Now, obviously, after death, you're dead. You can't make a change, but somebody else might be able to. I'll give you an example. Let's say you have you name your spouse, like most people do, say on a large IRA, and then you name your children contingent. After death, your spouse may say, you know, I don't need this money. I'd rather pass it on to my children. And she could what's called disclaim if she's named as the beneficiary and the children are named as contingent. Now, why would a spouse ever say, I don't want this? Maybe she was left better assets like tax-free life insurance, and that covers her for the rest of her life, and she'd rather disclaim the IRA. Why have taxable money when she could have tax-free if she doesn't need the IRA? And then if she disclaims, because the children were named contingent, it could pass directly through them, again, without going through probate, and they could get their stretch IRA and extend it over their lifetimes. It would last much longer in their lives than the spouse's life. So not only having a beneficiary, but a contingent beneficiary on every beneficiary form.
So this allows the primary beneficiary to make choices that he or she might not otherwise be able to make that can be significant. I'm just thinking as you were talking, Ed, what if Charity was named as a 10% beneficiary, as a contingent beneficiary? In this case, he or she could say, well, as a result of my spouse passing away, I want to disclaim that portion to go to Charity right off the front.
You could do that.
Very powerful.
Generally, my advice, if you're naming a charity, is to name a charity is a great beneficiary. If you're charitably inclined,
yes.
The IRA money is the money you want to give them because that's the taxable money. You'd rather give your other beneficiaries the tax-free money, the money that gets what we call step-up in basis, and there's no tax concerns. So if you are charitably inclined, the IRA is the taxable IRA, the pre-tax IRA. Generally, the traditional IRA is the one you want to leave to charity. But if you're going to do that, I always suggest naming the charity on a separate IRA. It's never a good idea to mix charities and children just to keep them separate, because after death, you don't know how long it's going to take. You'd have to cash the charity out, and there's a certain timeline by September 30th after death. You don't have to worry about any of those rules. If you want a charity to get some of your IRA money, just create a separate IRA, move some money in there as a direct transfer, and name the charity 100% on that.
And that is very easy to do with today's technology. If someone has, a $500,000 IRA, and they want $50,000 of that to go to a charity, what you're saying is open up another IRA with that $50,000 balance and name the charity as the primary beneficiary, perhaps, on that account.
Right, because that would be cleaner.
Right.
Yes.
It's not required, but as a practical tip, that was the best word, cleaner.
Yes.
The kids don't have to worry. The charity doesn't have to worry. They're not mixed together. It's cleaner. That's the perfect word.
Great.
And
good.
Ed, one thing that I picked up at the conferences that we have is when you name a trust as a beneficiary, you can still name another contingent. So then if you run in.
Yes, excellent. Right. Sure. That's another area. If I had to list two areas where we see the biggest and most costly mistakes with beneficiary forms, it's divorce, which I just said, and trust, as you just said. First, you know, many attorneys who do these trusts, they do the trust, but they don't follow up with the beneficiary form, and everybody thinks it's all taken care of. Yet I've been brought in on cases when it's too late to fix it after death. Where the trust was never even named as the beneficiary on the beneficiary form. They thought it was all taken care of. So even if you name a trust, if you want a trust to inherit it, if you create a trust, that trust has to be named. And as you just said, then name a contingent, say the spouse, in case it turns out they don't want the trust after death. They just want to do a spousal rollover, which is very common.
It's a great idea. So in essence, the spouse can disclaim trust being the primary beneficiary
if the
in that case.
Is the trustee, if
she's the trustee,
all the assets and the beneficiaries agree, of course.
So there are some caveats to understand about that, but it still ensures flexibility.
Yeah, that's why you need an advisor that has the specialized knowledge. My whole point, why you take the educational, the high-level study programs you do. And as you know, this is a big commitment of your time. You take out many days during the year on these high-impact, high-level educational programs. Now, if you're listening as a consumer, You want your advisor to have this education. I'm telling you, most don't, which means your retirement savings are in jeopardy. Why? Because the advisor you have, if they don't have this knowledge, it may cost you and your family in the long run. And I'm telling you, 99% of the advisors are not at the level that Dennis is because they don't take the education. And the biggest problem I see out there, and I can tell you because I train more advisors than anyone in the country in this area, most advisors don't know that they don't know, which makes them even more dangerous.
Great point, Ed. So Heidi attended the Master Elite Conference, but first we want to have her do what are normally the Shea Stats. And Heidi's going to be reading these for us. It's some very interesting ones. And then Heidi, right after that, has a few questions for Ed herself.
Okay, so first I'm going to read my disclaimer. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. So looking at the Shea Stats, read by Heidi this week, we have one that says the Fed funds futures market is forecasting a 57% chance of a December 2019 rate cut by the Federal Reserve as of the closing of trading last Friday. So that comes to us from the CME Group. And another one, from 1950 to 2018, the life expectancy of a 65-year-old American male has increased from 12.8 years to 18.1 years. That's an increase of 64 months. From 1950 to 2018, the life expectancy of a 65-year-old American female has increased from 15.1 years to 20.6 years. And that is an increase of 66 months, and that comes from the Social Security. So that's even more time that those retirement savings need to be stretched.
Great point. Yep. So plan on longer, and especially, obviously, that's an average, too.
Right.
And the people who listen to this program are definitely not average. I think we'd all agree on that, wouldn't we? Yes, we would. That's excellent.
Okay, I just have one final one. This is the Social Security Trust Fund paid out $853.5 billion in 2018, more than the $831 billion the fund produced in total income. The 2018 deficit breaks a streak of 34 consecutive years from 1984 to 2017 of income exceeding cost. As recently as 2009, the annual surplus was $134 billion. So since 2009, we've come from $134 billion surplus to a deficit. And that comes to us from OASI Trust Fund.
All right. Thank you, Heidi. So you have a couple questions for Ed.
Ed Slott.
Ed Slott. Thank you, Ed, for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so when I was at the conference, one thing I enjoyed is when Ed took a few minutes and told us some of the things that Ed would do to change some of the rules. And one of my
right. Listens to me, but go ahead.
Yeah, one of my favorite ones was the QMD.
I just made that up right there. But I like it. Do you like it?
I like it. You should tell everybody what that idea is.
All right, Heidi. And Heidi is also a master elite advisor like Dennis is, and that's why I'm on the program. I want consumers to know. Now, you both know what my mission is, that consumers need better prepared, better educated advisors in the retirement area. And both Dennis and Heidi are, which is a very unique. I said before they're in the top 1% of advisors. But I bet having two master elite advisors in one firm has got to put them in the top 0.1% of advisors all over the country. So people should know that. Anyway, my idea, Heidi, was most people know, I hope most people know, I'm sure your clients do, because whenever I stress something at a meeting, I know you're sharing that with your clients. So for the last few years, you know I've been stressing qualified charitable distributions. That is in the law, QCDs. And any IRA owner over 70 and a half years old that's charitably inclined should only be giving that way and save money on taxes. And the key there is you can direct your RMD as a direct transfer right to a charity. If you give to charity anyway, that's the best way to give. You'll always save money on your taxes that way. Now, so I had an idea along the same lines, just after seeing tax returns, how they've been coming out the last few years. I don't know about you if you look at your clients' tax returns, but over the last few years, it's not unusual to see a client with over $100,000 or more of medical expenses for nursing homes. We're seeing that more and more now.
Oh, yes, yes.
And what happens is, where do they get the money to pay those huge bills? Many times the money is coming from their IRA. So what happens is they have to take down, say, $100,000 from their IRA, which adds $100,000 to their income and to the tax. And then they deduct medical expenses. But the medical expense deductions, it's not a wash. You would think, well, if I take $100,000 from my IRA and pay it off in medical expenses, that's a wash. I don't owe any tax. Unfortunately, the tax law doesn't work that way, and it just got worse this year for 2019. To deduct medical expenses, they have to exceed 10% of your income. Well, if you're adding $100,000 to your income, the first $10,000 of that is not deductible. And that seems like a double whammy, like a whipsaw. The more you have to take out, the less you get to deduct. Plus, adding your income, it makes things like Social Security more taxable, can increase Medicare surcharges and take you out of the picture for other tax deductions, credits, or benefits. So my idea was, that doesn't seem fair. What about something, and this is not in the law, as Heidi said, it's just something I made up at the last meeting they went to. Instead of QCDs, how about QMDs, qualified medical distributions? In other words, the same theory as the QCD, if you have heavy medical deductions, I hope a congressman is listening.
And so they do I.
They should be listening to the Dennis Prout Show if they really want to know what's going on. So I hope somebody's
listening. We are cutting edge, Ed. Thank
you. To your congressman. Tell them to listen to the rebroadcast of this show. So the idea would be, if you need big dollars from your IRA to pay medical bills, see if there's a way to pay them directly from the IRA to the hospital or the doctor, just like you can do with charity. This way you don't have to include those big distributions in income if they're just going out in medical bills. Then it would be a wash. I think that would really help people, and it's something that's really needed just based on what I see of rising medical costs for long-term care.
Yes. Obviously, as we're living longer, the chances of a long-term stay increase dramatically. It's a great point.
Yeah, you know, living longer, Heidi made a point of those statistics. You don't have to look at the statistics. There was one day last week, or two over 2 days. I don't know, Dennis. It may be that I'm getting older, but do you find yourself, as you're getting older, looking at obituaries more?
I find myself going to the doctor more. Yeah.
I find like
keeping
myself
up with the physicals.
Interested in obituaries because I tend to know more of the people now.
Isn't that interesting?
Anyway,
great point.
Last week there was 2 days there where if you looked at the ages, and obviously the obituaries are the big famous people, but it gives an indication of what age people are dying at. So if you look last week, and if you didn't look, I'll tell you what you would have seen. Doris Day died at 97.
Wow.
Then this war hero, this is all within 2 days. I think three of them were in one paper. Then Robert Maxwell, the famous World War II hero who jumped on a grenade to save many people in World War II, amazing how he survived, he died at 98.
Wow.
Then Laura Bush's mother died at 99. Then Henry Woke, the Windsor War author, he died at 103, and I think I.M. Pei, the architect, died at 102. The average age of those of those obituaries was 100.
Wow, geez.
That was average.
Yes, amazing, amazing. We have commented on the radio show here, Ed, that we're going to notice a lot more slower Cadillacs driving around the roads here in the future as a part of this. Right? Yes, indeed.
But that just gives you a snapshot of the age. It is not unusual to see 98, 99, 100 in these obituaries. So that right. tells you, as Heidi said and Dennis, you said, your money has to last a long time.
It does.
You know, 30 years is not overstating a retirement period.
It is not at all. It is not at all. And we're seeing a lot. Our clients are aging, obviously. But their average age of our clients has risen dramatically just in the last 10 years as well. That's a great indicator,
right.
too. Now, the next point you had made in that I thought I wanted to cover was the unwanted 20% withholding, unwanted 20% withholding point that you made in your most recent newsletter for financial advisors. Could you talk about that for a moment?
Well, most people don't realize it, but and this is another one that I train advisors like Dennis and Heidi on, and that's why you want to work with these types of advisors. When you move money from your plan, let's say you retire from your plan, from your company, and after 30, 40 years of work, you have all this money in your 401k, and maybe you want to roll it to an IRA, always do direct transfers from the plan to the IRA. And that's where you need an advisor to help you get that done. If you don't do that, 20% is lost in mandatory withholding. It doesn't mean you lose the money, but I'll give you an example. Let's say you move $500,000 out of your 401k to roll it over to an IRA. If you don't do a direct transfer, you'll only get 80%. You'll only get $400,000 of that $500,000. The other $100,000 will be sent to the IRS for mandatory withholding, which you can claim credit for next year on your taxes. But why should you have to claim credit for that? It should be a tax-free rollover if you did it directly. Now you're going to be short $100,000 unless you happen to have $100,000 laying around to make up the rollover. If you don't, that becomes a taxable distribution when it never should have been. So you have to avoid that situation and only do direct transfers.
It's incredible how someone can wind up filling out their form on their own, if you will, checking
right.
that box that they thought they were having the check made
right.
out to their IRA, but they checked the wrong box.
Well, that's why they need guidance.
Yes.
This was an actual case we had where somebody checked the wrong box, and they couldn't fix it. Once you check that box, they can't undo it. And it's very confusing. This is not something you want to do on your own. There are a lot of things like home projects. You like to be a do-it-yourselfer. This is not one of them. This is your entire life savings, the money you work for most of your working life at stake. And now you're giving a bunch of documents with a bunch of check boxes. You want professional help here to make sure the right box is checked so you don't lose 20% of your money. Again, you don't lose it. You get credit for it, but you may end up with a taxable, unwanted taxable distribution.
Great point, Ed. All right, let's take a break, shall we, Ron? And we'll be back in a few minutes.
Special guest today from New York, Mr. Ed Slott, is on the phone. Back to you, Dennis.
Great. Thanks, Ron. It's a pleasure to have Ed with us. And as Ed was talking about these forms, honestly, in my own mind, I was picturing different situations where I've been involved with clients calling the administrator of these 401ks, in some cases, to verify their forms. Now, what exactly, how does this form need to be filled out? What does this mean, the way that every form from most of these institutions tends to be different and have its own legalese, if you would? Some of it is very clear. Sometimes it's very clear they're well done. Other times, they're not. And in fact, we've had phone calls where we're calling the individuals, the trustees and or the directors of this trust account, and they specifically state, well, yes, that's a little complicated. You're going to need to include your own wording and highlight that with this form to make certain that that's done properly.
Wow.
In this case, it might be NUA, which we're not going to get into if the individual happens to own individual stock in a 401k. So sometimes these are straightforward. Sometimes these are not. And when they're not, the difference in tax and or long-term financial benefit to the client avoiding the tax is incredible. And Ed has mentioned this in the past. You know, obviously people are concerned about fees on accounts, but the tax, and a mistaken tax situation can overcome a fee for 20, 25 years. So tax avoidance can be a huge part of any planning situation and can really benefit. So having someone on your team, if you will, that's what we do. These are intense conversations we have, and we're calling these 401k administrators in many cases. So great point, Ed, and thank you. Thank you for joining us again.
I think that's the single most valuable service. And as you know, in every meeting for every year, I don't think there's ever been a meeting I didn't bang that point home and, you know, hit everyone over the head and say, check beneficiary forms, right?
Yes, really, really important. Next is the the excess contributions. Not all contributions to IRAs belong in IRAs. When a contribution is not permitted in an IRA, it's considered to be an excess contribution. Now, it's important that a client file the Form 5329. It is its own tax return. And if it's not filed, the statute of limitations doesn't start to run. The IRS can go back indefinitely to assess the penalty on the excess contribution, as well as penalties for failure to file and pay, plus interest. Now, do you see this very often, Ed, in your own practice?
You see it more often than you would think. Most people are okay, but every now and then you see somebody that doesn't know that they didn't qualify to make a Roth IRA contribution because there are income limits and they might have been over the income limits. Or maybe they made a Roth contribution and then got a bonus at the end of the year and forgot about it, and all of a sudden they're over the limit. That's an excess contribution. Or maybe they contributed to an IRA at age 75 and there's an age limit after 70 and a half, you can't do that, and they didn't realize it. That's an excess contribution. Or maybe, probably the most common area, is with beneficiaries who are often not privy to the, or not involved in the planning that their parents did, and they inherit an IRA. I'm talking about children, not spouses, who can do a rollover, and they put it in their own IRA, which you can't do. That makes it taxable. That's an excess contribution. Or they blow what's called the once, not the beneficiaries, but let's say you have an IRA and you don't know about the once per year rollover rule limitation. Now, a good advisor would know, but most advisors are not educated in this area. If you do a second rollover, most people don't realize that. That's taxable. You can't fix that. And if you put it in your IRA, that's an excess contribution. So what's the problem with excess contributions? The money's not supposed to be there. And if it stays there, there's an ongoing 6% penalty every year until it's pulled out. That's big money. You know, who makes 6% this year? Well, the IRS does on an excess contribution.
That's an unfortunate answer to your question.
You don't want to procrastinate.
That's right. So the key is don't procrastinate on this. And what does a client do if they've got that kind of a situation, Ed?
Well, you can correct it. You actually have a big time frame to correct it. You have until October 15th of the year after the excess. So if you had a mistake like that right now in 2019, you'd have until October 15th, 2020 to correct it. That's not the problem. The problem is knowing you have a problem, working with an advisor that can find this and ask the right questions.
So filing the form then starts the statute of limitations, and as long as the penalties obviously are paid and taken care of as well, that will take
but
care
you
of
don't, sure you can get you can avoid the penalty by fixing it in the required time, and then you don't even have an issue.
That's a great point.
So, but again, the reason it doesn't happen is because most people don't know they have a problem. It's not picked up. I see many times where the accountant doesn't pick it up after doing their tax returns and doesn't pick up that, wow, how could you have a Roth contribution with income of $300,000? They should have picked that up as an excess.
Interesting. So sometimes the accountant misses it and or an uninformed advisor, as you say, can miss an excess contribution there. Great point.
Well, it's easy for an accountant to miss an excess Roth contribution because when you contribute to a Roth IRA, it doesn't go on the tax return.
Yes.
So they might not see it unless they're trained like you are and Heidi is to look for these things. They would totally miss it.
Now, speaking of totally missing it, let's talk about the QCD in terms of its own reporting. That's an important piece, which is not in here, but could you add to that conversation, what should a client tell their accountant in regards to the QCDs that they've taken for the year?
Well, if you're smart and you gave to charity the right way using the qualified charitable distribution, and again, it's only for IRA owners who are 70 and a half. It's not for everybody. But if you're in that group and you move, say, $10,000 or $3,000, whatever gift you made to the charity, and you had to be, it had to be made directly from your IRA to the charity, you must tell your tax preparer. They won't know from the 1099 you give them. That's the form you get for any distribution from your IRA. It's a 1099-R. The accountant, if they're not informed, they won't know you made a contribution, and they'll pick it up as income.
That's
so
right.
You have to tell them. It's not coded. There is no coding to tell a tax preparer that you did a QCD. You have to tell them.
Now, we provide a standard letter to each of our clients that
That's
tells
good.
Them this is important tax information.
Well, actually, we got that idea because Dennis and I were at the Ed's.
We stole that from Ed?
Well,
I didn't realize
Ed
that.
Ed suggested
actually,
to
it
us.
It came from Michelle, one of our advisors, who shared it with the whole group, which is another great thing about this group we're talking about, Ed Slott's Elite IRA Advisor Group. And my mission for many, many, over 15 years, is that consumers work with better educated advisors because it will cost you money if you don't. And what they do at these educational training programs, which most advisors don't attend, you're talking with two advisors that are at a highest level, master elite level, and they share their best ideas. So that's where, if you're talking about that letter, it came from one of our other elite advisors who does that with clients and shared it with the whole group and allowed me to put it right in our course manual.
That's fantastic.
And so now we use that every year at the end of the year in December.
Yeah.
We send a letter listing all the QCDs that client made for the year so that they can take that letter right to their accountant when they're doing the tax return.
Exactly, yeah.
The number of clients that we have.
Most other advisors don't do.
That's thank you, Ed. It's amazing the increasing number of clients we have are doing QCDs. Obviously, a great tax benefit. We're encouraging clients to do that, and they're picking up on it.
You're going to see. Here's a little preview for you, Dennis and Heidi. later today, right after the show, in case you're listening on the replay on Saturday, but if you're listening live Thursday, you're going to see an email with your next issue of the IRA Advisor, a newsletter that you also use to keep yourself up to date. And we're featuring five questions we got about QCDs where people are still making mistakes.
Great point. I was wondering if that when that newsletter was going to come out. So the last point is...
You don't have to wonder.
It's
check
today.
Check your email later today.
All right. Now, the last point...
We wanted to have everybody in our group, in our educational study group, have good tax reading for the Memorial Day weekend. Because that's what advisors like Dennis and Heidi do. They don't go to parades. They read tax information so they can help their clients.
Well, that was very thoughtful of you, Ed. Thank you.
On the other hand, I will be at my parade. It's one thing I do every year. I live in the same town I grew up in, the same parade I marched in when I had my Little League uniform on and all of that. And it's just something special. It's a very little town. We have like the little main street. And everybody comes out. They bring their chairs. They sit on the sidewalk with their and everybody gets American flags. And the fire engines come out and the bands. It's just, you know, it just brings me back to a time. And I never miss that. I always walk down there and walk with the parade up to the high school where it ends. And it's just a great thing. So that's what I'll be doing Monday.
Fantastic. So the last point, Ed, incorrect 1099s. Now, what's interesting, I still remember the illustration you gave of you sitting there with a client and you're looking at a 1099, and the client's got, $100,000 extra income from an IRA, and you look at this thing and it's taxable. And you say to the client, did you take a $100,000 distribution from your IRA? And the client says, I don't know what you're talking about. So what happens in that kind of situation, Ed?
Well, you can fix it on the tax return. I mean, these are things that should be checked, you know, before the 1099 is issued, but sometimes you don't know about it until it's issued. But it can be fixed up on the tax return by recording it correctly on the tax return. So, again, most people don't know that, and they'll report it incorrectly. And if you do that, you're really in trouble because it can be fixed. I'm not saying it can't be fixed, but then you're in a letter-writing campaign with IRS that will probably outlive you.
So Form 1099 can be a great source of confusion and information, but it doesn't tell the whole story when it comes to retirement account distributions, and sometimes it can be incorrect. So,
many times.
Yeah. So you've seen this many times.
They should be checked immediately as soon as they come out. Because sometimes they can be corrected by the institution.
Oh, well, yeah, we've requested institutions to do this and correct their 1099
and they will,
mistakes.
In some cases, issue a corrected 1099-R.
Yes.
And it will say corrected right at the top.
Yes.
Matter of fact, as any tax practitioner like myself knows, when we're doing tax returns for clients, the big brokerage firms are constantly sending corrected 1099s.
That's a continuum because of the complexity of some of the reports that they're getting as well. Often they'll issue those corrected 1099s.
Right.
An ongoing process for many tax filers these days. So in terms of any other points that you wanted to make, Ed, what else might you say about the common issues or themes you see from clients that they should be keeping track of and be aware of?
Well, we hit the big ones, the beneficiary forms, but check rollo. Before you move money, before you, you know, IRA money, 401k money, I always say this, it's like an eggshell. You break it, it's over. You may only get one chance to do this right, and if you break it, you could have a tax on your entire retirement savings. This is critical to be very careful. Only work with a competent, qualified advisor that has that is highly educated in this area, which is why I created Ed Slott's Elite IRA Advisor Group, of which both Dennis and Heidi are master members. It means they've been in for many, many years studying this. Do not move money by yourself. The rules are complex. They're unforgiving. Many times you make a mistake. It could be a simple rollover from one IRA to another that causes your IRA to be fully taxed. You know, you got to be careful. I think if there's one big message, that's the message. Don't try this at home.
Appreciate it, Ed. Appreciate the great info. For anyone who has information requests or would like to check us out, it's proutfinancialdesign.com. Our phone number, 231-947-3992. Thanks, right. Ed. Thanks, Ed, for coming on. Sure appreciate your time.
Oh, great talking with you both.
Thanks,
Take
Ed.
Take care now.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.